evening. My name is Al Whitney. Welcome to the In Defense of Humanity program on this 25th day of March 2017. This program is about helping people reawaken to the wonderful qualities of our own species while accepting and understanding that the current corporate commercial legal structure, both government and business, is built upon, is actively seeking to take control of most organic life forms on our planet. Restoring our unalienable rights and preserving our planet will require that we, the people, understand what has happened and learn how to empower ourselves as living men and women. Much of the information discussed on this show can be found on my website, anticorruptionsociety.com. If you need to remind yourself why humanity is worth defending, please read and enjoy the In Defense of Humanity page listed at the top of the Anti-Corruption Society homepage. I'd like to make new listeners aware that there is a free People's Empowerment Guide to our Corporate Commercial Legal System on my website called Lawfully Yours. It is a collaboration of many men and women in the legal accountability movement. You can locate it by clicking on the Lawfully Yours tab at the top of the home page. We keep adding to it as more information and ideas come to our attention. This guide contains valuable strategies for challenging the non-existent authority of our corporate government. Well, tonight I'd like to talk a little bit more about the medical-industrial complex that's been in my world pretty heavily since the beginning of the year. I think I've shared with people someone very close in our family has been very ill, and I got called into this situation and started looking at things and reading papers and looking up side effects and looking at forms. And much to my dismay, the system is just as broken as I've been saying, only it was just really in my face the last several months, how badly broken it is. And one of the problems that we're all facing if we engage with the industrial medical complex is the influence, the power and influence that Big Pharma has over the entire profession. We've talked about that before. I think I recommended people watch the documentary. It was a show made by Amy Goodman called Big Bucks, Big Pharma. We talked about that, and I had clips on that. And just recently, however, I think it was yesterday, I ran across another one called The Marketing of Madness, and I listened to this one, which is 3 hours long. I recommend it. It's free online. Just go to YouTube and type in The Marketing of Madness. And this is an expose on how it is that they brought in what they call psychotropic drugs, how they brought them into our society, how it is that now psychiatrists do nothing more than prescribe psychotropic drugs. And what they are is an effort from Big Pharma through psychiatrists to promote their products to people who have emotional difficulty, or even people who can't cope at all and need to be hospitalized, people who have had nervous breakdowns, people who had depression, people who have anxiety, all of these conditions which can happen to anyone, I might add. And Big Pharma saw this as a way through psychiatry to find a whole nother line of drugs to promote within our society. And this wonderful documentary called The Marketing of Madness is something everyone should see, because not only does it talk about psychotropic drugs, it talks about the way the drug cartel manipulates the entire system from top to bottom. It does an excellent job. And you could take and insert vaccines instead of psychotropic drugs and you get the same picture, you could insert statin drugs or some of these dangerous cardiac drugs and get the same picture, because the playbook is the same. They've established it over many years. They've got all the money in the world. If you haven't looked at the page on Anti-Corruption Society, there's a tab at the top that says Big Pharma Exposed. And what I've done there is I've attempted to put together important material from insiders. This page is not about my opinion. It is the insiders who are raising the flag, ringing the bell, trying to warn us that there's something truly, truly wrong with the way Big Pharma has taken over the field of medicine. Last week, I think I mentioned that was done early on. A lot of people still don't see that was done when the AMA was formed by the Rockefellers. So, and the FDA, gosh, in the beginning of the last century, the big oil cartel, the snake oil salesman, John D. Rockefeller, finagled his way into government and influence and launched this drug culture into all the medical schools, and pretty much it's everywhere today. But I'd like to play a few clips from this wonderful, wonderful documentary and, you know, talk about a few things that each clip offers, because this is really important information for us to understand. I have mentioned, and everyone needs to understand, that while you might be wise in taking care of your health yourself and doing natural things, and you're just feeling peachy keen, and I recommend that for everyone, and I applaud those who are doing it, you cannot avoid knowing something about this medical industrial complex, because, like the individual close to me, that they did not make an appointment and go in and see someone. They wound up unconscious in the emergency room. And should that happen, that's where you're going to be, right smack in the middle of it. So having some knowledge is really going to be important should that happen to you or any of your friends or loved ones. So let's take another look at what Big Pharma has done and how they do it. And I think you're going to find some things alarming, especially when we get down to discuss how they're trying to reach out to our children without our knowledge or consent. So why don't we start with clip A, Ken? Can we do that?
According to psychiatrists at the World Health Organization, 450 million people worldwide have a mental disorder. Three times the metropolitan populations of Tokyo, New York, Los Angeles, London, Paris, Mexico City, Mumbai, Milano, Madrid, Toronto, Washington, Athens, Melbourne, Hong Kong, Singapore, Rome, and Berlin combined. Are there really this many mentally ill? Or is this just a case of good marketing? In early 1999, the United States was confronted with news of a frightening new disease epidemic. You blush, sweat, shake, even find it hard to breathe, posters read, with the tagline, "Imagine being allergic to people." The disease was social anxiety disorder, SAD, or SAD, and it was claimed to affect about 13.3% of the American population. And to find out more, readers were instructed to contact a group called the Social Anxiety Disorder Coalition. What the public was not told was that both the coalition and the campaign were created by a public relations agency and bankrolled by a drug company. Later that year, while the campaign was making millions of people aware of this previously unknown disease, the antidepressant Paxil became the first drug approved by the FDA for the treatment of social anxiety disorder. Psychiatrists such as Jack Gorman of Columbia University and Murray Stein of the University of California at San Diego signed up as psychiatric frontmen for Paxil's ad campaign. And within 3 years, Paxil shot from third place in its drug class to first. Paxil's product director would later boast, Every marketer's dream is to find an unidentified or unknown market and develop it. That's what we were able to do with social anxiety disorder. Paxil's competition took notice. That same year, Pfizer got FDA approval to sell its antidepressant, Zoloft, for treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder. They too hired a public relations firm to create their own psychiatric front group and paid psychiatrists to spread the word about the disorder. This campaign would claim that one person in 13 would develop PTSD over the course of a lifetime. And this included anyone witnessing a violent act, natural disaster, or distressing event. And as with Paxil, sales of Zoloft skyrocketed.
For the psychiatric drugs, the goal is to have as many people on them as possible. So the way to do that is to convince normal people that they have some defect or mental disease or condition that requires treatment. So I mean that's the way they do it. They hire these big marketing companies to come up with these campaigns.
We're going to tell you about your disease so that you can lead a happier, healthier life. Oh, and by the way, we have a drug too that helps to treat this disease.
This practice of selling sickness is known as disease mongering, a term defined by the late journalist Lynn Payer as trying to convince essentially well people that they are sick, or slightly sick people that they are very ill. On Madison Avenue, disease mongering is accomplished through a strategy known as condition branding, where mental illness is pitched just like cars, beer, or laundry detergent. And according to top New York branding guru Vince Parry, no therapeutic category is more accepting of condition branding than the field of anxiety and depression, where illness is rarely based on measurable physical symptoms and therefore open to conceptual definition. Parry then suggests to executives three principal strategies for what he called fostering the creation of psychiatric illness. The first is elevating the importance of a condition, or leading the public to believe that a minor or temporary mental problem is much worse and far more widespread than it really is. Prior to the introduction of SSRI antidepressants, depression was considered, even by psychiatrists, to affect only 100 people per million. Since then, estimates have been raised to as many as 100,000 cases per million, a 1,000-fold increase. The result is about 10% of Americans, some 27 million people, currently on antidepressants, twice as many as in 1996.
Very good marketing. That all, you know, expressions of human emotion, deep sadness and fear and anger and whatever else they happen to be, are now classified as, you know, a major problem, a psychiatric problem, a psychological problem that needs to be dealt with drugs.
Another psychiatric illness, bipolar disorder, was also considered rare, affecting only 0.1% when it was first introduced in the DSM-3. Today, there are claims that as many as 10% of the population, 100 times the original number, have the condition. Pediatric bipolar disorder was not even listed in the DSM when Harvard psychiatrist Dr. Joseph Biederman began publishing studies claiming that mood swings in children were not normal behaviors, but in reality, mental illnesses. Biederman's disease mongering campaign worked. In the last decade alone, the rate of children labeled with bipolar has soared 4,000%. But what parents were not told was that 25 different drug companies had underwritten Dr. Biederman's work. The extent of their influence was not revealed until a 2008 Senate investigation exposed Dr. Biederman for failing to report more than $1.6 million in pharmaceutical income. But these revelations had no effect on psychiatry. Pediatric bipolar continues to be widely accepted in the psychiatric community.
These labels are being applied to younger and younger children, which I think is really, you know, a sad case. Not sure I agree with any of those labels to begin with, but let alone for them to be applied universally to young kids.
This idea that kids, that childhood itself is a psychiatric disease, is simply based off some completely unsubstantiated idea that got printed in the psychiatric manual, and there's no science behind it whatsoever.
Disease mongering strategy number two, redefining an existing condition. This tactic takes an ordinary state of mind and recasts it as a psychiatric disease that now must be treated with drugs. Case in point, the winter blues, a common mental condition related to the lack of sunlight during winter months, but redefined by psychiatrists as seasonal affective disorder, a psychiatric disease requiring psychiatric treatment. As another example, consider the changing emotions during a woman's menstruation, made over by psychiatrists as premenstrual dysphoric disorder, a mental illness discovered not in a laboratory, but in the marketing department of drug maker Eli Lilly.
When Prozac patent came up, they realized they needed to come up with some sort of new, to keep the money rolling in, and they came up with a new disorder. They just made it out of thin air, you know, the premenstrual dysphoric disorder, the PMDD, and then the new wonder drug, which was Seraphem, which if you look at Seraphem on the back of the label, it just says, this is Prozac. And they were able to keep that patent so that nobody else could make it, so that they could keep that money rolling in.
Many of the drugs today are simply drugs repackaged. They're drugs that had a patent and now are generic, or now get called something else, or they decide now to use them for something else.
Disease mongering strategy number 3, creating a new condition for an unmet market need. Example, compulsive shopping disorder, publicized by psychiatrist Dr. Jack Gorman. In Gorman's public appearances, a recent study was cited that claimed that as many as 20 million Americans, 90% of them women, could have the problem. What he did not reveal was that the study was funded by Forest Laboratories, maker of the antidepressant Celexa, and that he was a paid consultant to at least 13 pharmaceutical firms, Forest included. Most consumers have never heard of the concept of marketing of disease for profit, but to those in the advertising and drug industries, it is well known. A 2005 Reuters Business Insight report, written for drug company executives, notes that the ability to create new disease markets is bringing untold billions in soaring drug sales, and that the coming years will bear greater witness to the corporate-sponsored creation of disease.
If I can't get along with my husband, take a drug. If I'm feeling a little depressed, take a drug. If I can't study properly, take a drug. We've become a fast food, what I call a fast food, fast drug society.
One might then ask, is anyone questioning this rampant increase in extremely questionable and scientifically unproven mental diagnoses? In April 2006, the British Medical Journal inadvertently found out when they published a groundbreaking study announcing a newly discovered psychiatric disease, motivational deficiency disorder, or MODED. Characterized by lethargy and an unwillingness to work, MODED was claimed to affect millions. But when media outlets around the world uncritically broadcast the news, the journal told the truth. The study was part of their April Fool's Day edition. But the joke made its point. Disease mongering works. Even people without any mental illness at all can be deemed at risk and recommended drug treatment. One study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association urged all stroke victims to take an antidepressant to prevent depression, whether they were depressed or not. It was later discovered that its authors had an undisclosed financial relationship with the maker of the antidepressant, Lexapro. Preventive drugging is the wave of the future. As one expert noted, there is an apparently limitless amount of money to be made from marketing pharmaceutical remedies for diseases, and even more from remedies to reduce risk factors for disease.
And of course, every time they come out with a new medicine.
Okay. We're going to break. Be back shortly.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of 7 herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now, and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutriMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutrition meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutriMedical's Life Support.
Urged all stroke victims to take an antidepressant to prevent depression, whether they were depressed or not. It was later discovered that its authors had an undisclosed financial relationship with the maker of the antidepressant, Lexapro. Preventive drugging is the wave of the future. As one expert noted, there is an apparently limitless amount of money to be made from marketing pharmaceutical remedies for diseases, and even more from remedies to reduce risk factors for disease.
And of course, every time they come out with a new mental disorder, then they come out with a new drug to counteract it. At least to me, it seems like nothing more than a marketing ploy.
There are certain executives in the pharmaceutical manufacturers that have stated that one day in America, every person will be on drugs, healthy or not.
With these clever disease-mongering campaigns, 100 million people worldwide are currently on psychotropic drugs. And as a result, the psychotropic drug industry is grossing over $150,000 every minute. Observed one consumer advocate, you can sell hundreds of millions of dollars worth of a drug, even a bad drug, if you have the right marketing campaign. Which leads us to our next question. Now that disease-mongering campaigns are creating the illusion of widespread mental illness, how safe are the drugs psychiatrists are prescribing to treat it?
Okay. I think it's important to note that when it comes to these antidepressants, no, they don't work. What was interesting is I had a good friend who had a horrible loss, someone he cared very much about, left his life, and he was 60, and he just couldn't see getting another partner, and he basically fell apart. Well, he went to see his doctor, and they put him on an antidepressant. What was so interesting is that it didn't work. He still was crying all the time. He was sad all the time. And when I asked him about it, he said, well, the doctor told me that it takes 6 weeks for the drug to start working. And after I listened to this documentary and looked into this, I realized that that's how they get by with it. They tell these people who are in terrible, terrible depression, I'm going to give you an antidepressant, it will help you. Oh, by the way, it won't work for 6 weeks, but still take it. Well, generally, by the time 6 weeks are up, people are better anyway, so it's real safe. Then they credit the drug for the improved state of the man or woman, when in actuality, many things have happened in that 6 weeks period, and friends have come forward, and possibly, you know, new interests have begun. So there's some recovery that's going to take place just by time. But this man did not believe me, and he pretty much felt that the drug was going to help him, and I don't think it did. Eventually, he recovered on his own. Okay, so they have no qualms about misrepresenting their product. I think people can hear that in this documentary. They have no obligation to tell you the truth. They're making a lot of money. And now they're talking about making money by preventing diseases, which brings us right back into the absolutely outrageous growing number of vaccines they want to promote. And vaccines are particularly profitable because they have no liability. And if they can get the state legislature or the hospital or anybody to make a rule that everybody has to take this vaccine or lose their job or not be allowed in school, it's all pure profit. And there seems to be no mechanism in place to protect the public from this outrageous attack that is, coming against everyone. If the World Health Organization's involved, this is a global nightmare. Okay, so let's hear the next section. We'll start it now, and we'll probably have to break away, but then Ken will continue it so you can hear the rest of it. Are these drugs safe or effective? Oh, okay. All right, well, when we come back, we'll do that and talk about, are they safe or effective? Because if you look at the Big Pharma Exposed on the Anti-Corruption Society page and scroll down, you will see that there are many insiders that are screaming, no, they're neither safe nor effective. And that's true with vaccines, and it's true with many other drugs as well. And how do they get on the market when they're neither safe nor effective? And that's what's going to be explained in the next clip. So stay tuned.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
PatriotPrepared.com carries the leading brands of storable food from Numana, Legacy, and Heaven's Harvest. Patriot Prepared. Our name says it all. We're dedicated to empowering you to be self-reliant and confident in any circumstance. Whether you want to be prepared in the event of an emergency or you're an outdoor sports enthusiast, PatriotPrepared.com has prepackaged meals and kits for your entire family. Legacy, Heaven's Harvest, and Numana are known for high-quality, great-tasting GMO free nutritious food with no chemical preservatives. Simple to prepare, easy to store, gluten-free and organic high-quality nutrition options with a 25-year shelf life. You can't beat the feeling of being food secure when you need it most. So go to PatriotPrepared.com right now to pick up your supply of high-quality storable food for your family, because it makes good sense to be prepared. That's PatriotPrepared.com.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants. and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Okay, welcome back. We're talking about the schemes of Big Pharma to convince us we're all nuts. But really, we're talking more about the entire industry and the shenanigans and the schemes that they use to sell their products to an unsuspecting public. So they're claiming these things are safe and effective, but the truth is not, that's not the truth. The truth is actually the opposite. So let's play the next audio clip.
According to psychiatrists at the World Health Organization, 450 million people worldwide have a mental disorder. Three times the metropolitan populations of Tokyo,
Ken,
New York. Plus,
I think we played that one, didn't we? We need clip B. Are you there? Okay.
In modern psychiatry, psychotropic drugs have become the weapons of choice. But are they as safe as we've been led to believe? International regulatory bodies, such as the United States Food and Drug Administration, require that all drugs be proven safe and effective before they can be released. To accomplish this, pharmaceutical companies must conduct thorough and exacting clinical trials that prove the safety and efficacy of their drugs prior to marketing. At least, that's what's supposed to happen. But underneath the public relations veneer, claims of psychotropic drug safety by psychiatrists and drug companies are far from the truth. And there are many reasons why. To begin with, drug safety testing is predominantly done by drug companies, not by governmental agencies or independent laboratories, creating an obvious conflict of interest.
They pay for it, they bring in the researchers, they have every opportunity to skew the research, to manipulate it, to produce exactly what they want it to produce.
The first step in submitting an application for a psychotropic drug is to find a disorder in psychiatry's diagnostic and statistical manual and attach it to the drug. Then clinical trials begin, first on animals, then on humans. If the drug makes it to human testing, clinical trials then follow four phases. In phase one, it is tested on a very small number of volunteers, usually healthy young subjects, to determine if the drug is not overly toxic and what side effects it carries.
And the studies that are done have young men or women that have very little body fat and are healthy in their 20s. They don't test these drugs on elderly people that have a huge amount of body fat or different proportion of body fat, and they hold their the reaction of their drugs was totally different, but they don't ever consider that.
In phase two, psychiatric researchers determine if the drug creates the sought-after effects on the human body and how large a dose can be given before drug toxicity sets in. As in phase one, test subjects are mostly healthy young volunteers.
So just the people that I already know are going to perform well on my drug are going to be entered in this trial. Well, how well do you think your drug's going to come out?
Phase 3 testing compares the psychotropic drug against a placebo or sugar pill. Although Phase 3 testing is larger and more extensive than Phases 1 or 2, it normally involves only about 1,000 patients and lasts a mere 4 to 8 weeks, certainly not enough time to determine any long-term side effects. Today, clinical research is a profit-driven multinational industry, where drug companies and psychiatric researchers are involved in every detail, from study design to data analysis to study publication. But in doing their trials, psychiatrists face a problem the rest of the medical field does not. They have no scientific lab tests to objectively measure improvement.
On a clinical trial for, say, a drug for cancer or for high cholesterol, it's easy to see if something is working because you can look at the study result. The cholesterol level is dropped, or the cancer is shrunk, or the cancer cells are going away, or there are less of them. You can physically see the answer. With mental health issues, you don't have that luxury.
It is this lack of science that permits psychiatric drug researchers many opportunities to skew results of drug trials in the pharmaceutical company's favor.
One of the ones I think that is most important is the placebo washout. And what that is basically that they give people placebo pill, the sugar pill, and then anybody who says that they feel better, they get rid of them. And so in which case, they already skew the sample of people being included into the study. That's going to stack the cards against the placebo, and it's going to show an artificial greater effect for the drug.
The data shows that the people that got placebo did better. And you know what the researcher said? Oh, that's the placebo effect. We want to get those people out of the study.
Another trick of the trade involves giving subjects the test drugs prior to the trial and then putting them in withdrawal. Then, after starting the trial, they are put back on the test drug and will either come out of withdrawal and score better, or, if on a placebo, will continue to feel worse. Psychiatrist Richard Morrison, for example, took schizophrenics off Haldol to generate active psychosis, then put them back on Haldol during the trial. In spite of this, his study is still cited in psychiatric literature.
Another way that they can manipulate the data is unweighted distributions. I have three studies that I look at. One study has 1,000 people in it, and another one has 10 people in it, and another one has 15 people in it. The 1,000-person study showed that the drug was no benefit at all. But the two other studies that only had 10 and 15 people in it showed the drugs were incredibly superior. So what do they say? They say two out of three studies showed greater benefit to the drug group.
Perhaps the most common way of tilting the outcome of a clinical trial is simply not to count the individuals dropping out of the study because of the side effects. In fact, in clinical trials for the antipsychotic Zyprexa, two-thirds of the 2,500 participants had so many side effects they dropped out. Of the remaining 800, 22% reported serious adverse reactions to the drug. And during the Prozac approval trials, of the 11,000 patients tested, only 286, less than 3%, actually completed the short 4 to 6 week trials. In another common practice, adverse side effects are covered up by giving additional drugs that are not part of the study. And some researchers have been known to simply falsify the studies. Case in point, psychiatrist Farouk Abuzahab, former ethics committee chair of the Minnesota Psychiatry Society, whose patient he recruited into one of his clinical trials, reported having extreme thoughts of suicide. In his research documents, however, he noted zero adverse events. 2 days later, she jumped from a Minneapolis bridge to her death. A final way of skewing test data is to hide unwanted drug reactions under less frightening terms. This trick was used in the notorious Paxil Study 329, where such side effects as aggressive events, homicidal thoughts, and homicidal acts were categorized under the word hostility, while under the nebulous term emotional lability were filed suicidal thoughts and actions. In many cases, clinical trials are set up not to look for violence and suicide at all.
It is a problem that if these clinical trials don't specifically really ask a lot of questions about the nature of suicidal ideation and how the person feels and hopelessness and akathisia, if they don't ask those questions very specifically, they're not going to really get that data, and it's not going to come up.
Designing biased trials to avoid negative findings, interpreting the raw data to favor your drug, and spinning the entire study to accentuate the positive are just some of the many, many ways to bias a trial. It is this perfect storm of intellectual dishonesty that has led one drug expert to conclude that it can be proven that most claimed research findings are false. But it is the drug companies that own the studies. And when they believe they have compiled enough evidence to convince regulators that their drug is safe and effective, they submit their phase 3 clinical trials for approval. The FDA only requires that 2 clinical trials be submitted, so drug companies can conduct as many studies as it takes to find the 2 that have the best chance at FDA approval.
You only need 2 positive trials against placebo, and it doesn't matter if you did 1,000, as long as you should get 2. And it's amazing, sometimes they actually don't. They might pool data from another couple of clinical trials in order to get that approved.
They don't need to report all their data. They don't need to report all the trials that they do. They only need to report the ones that they want. They can hand pick whichever one they want and then submit just those couple to the FDA.
As FDA Director of the Division of Neuropharmacological Drug Products, psychiatrist Paul Lieber complained, the sponsor could just do studies until the cows come home, until he gets 2 of them that are statistically significant by chance alone, walks them out, and says he had met the criteria.
The New England Journal published a study about a year ago showing that many clinical trials that had been conducted and registered with the Food and Drug Administration were never published because they came out showing no significant advantage over placebo. So antidepressants are not as effective as they are being made out to be, and the side effects are not as emphasized as much as they should be.
This point was driven home in 2008 by psychologist Irving Kirsch and his colleagues, who obtained every clinical trial ever submitted, published and unpublished, from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration of 4 new generation antidepressants. The results were both alarming and enlightening. In Kirsch's words, antidepressant medications have reported only modest benefits over placebo treatment. And when unpublished trial data are included, the benefit falls below accepted criteria for clinical significance. In addition to this, volumes of effects associated with these antidepressants have since been discovered, including homicide, suicide, and mass murder.
People really don't realize that from the beginning there's been a question of how marginally efficacious these drugs really are, apart from placebo.
And yet we have horrific side effects. Combine the 2, and where's your risk-to-benefit ratio? It's down the toilet.
But psychiatrists dismiss Kirsch's study because psychotropic drugs are big business, and clinical trials are a big part of that business. Take, for example, Martin Keller, former chair of the psychiatry department at Brown University, lead author of the so-called Paxil 329 study. This clinical trial, which tested hundreds of children on the antidepressant Paxil, found that the drug was generally well-tolerated and effective, which in scientific terms is glowing praise. And the study's list of co-authors, 22 of the most prominent key opinion leaders in psychiatry.
I mean, that was a lot of people, but they were the who's who of psychiatry. And this was going to be a publication that I think, you know, took them, you know, into the end zone on getting their approval for kids.
With the FDA's blessing, Paxil became a blockbuster in the child and adolescent market, with sales of $55 million in 2002. It wasn't until the New York State Attorney General's office sued in 2004 that the truth finally came out. The raw data showed that not only was Paxil no more effective than placebo, but the young patients on Paxil were 6 times more likely to have suicidal thoughts. In fact, this data also revealed that 11 of the 93 children on the study developed serious side effects, of whom 7 had to be hospitalized. But according to Keller's own administrator, many of those children were either dropped from the study or coded as non-compliant to avoid having to be counted. While admitting no guilt, the drug company settled out of court for $2.5 million, less money than Paxil was grossing every 7 hours. Hundreds of civil suits followed, but when Dr. Keller, as lead author of the Paxil 329 study, was deposed by attorneys, he would not admit to much.
I can't remember exactly what I said. I don't remember anything specific about any of these meetings. If my name wasn't on the top, I wouldn't remember ever having seen it. If I saw them, I don't remember. The answer is, I don't remember. I don't recall if I was. I don't recall asking him, which isn't to say that I didn't.
I want to pick up on the question Mr. Coffin asked you about the fivefold increase of the Paxil kids experiencing suicidality over the placebo kids. Do you recall those questions?
I do.
And you said that you weren't particularly aware of that except for with regard to a manuscript that was sent to you in confidence by GSK?
Correct.
That actually is not correct, though. I mean, this was an issue that had been presented to you by a number of different reporters that you personally responded to. Is that correct?
I don't remember.
How could Dr. Keller have known so little about the drug study of which he was lead author and which he himself used to promote Paxil for children in prominent medical journals and conferences?
The ultimate publication of Study 329 was ghostwritten by an agency hired by GlaxoSmithKline, and eventually they, after the manuscript was written, they put Martin Keller's name on it as an author.
You know, there again, I mean, maybe you can tell me where I can find it in the paper.
No, I'm asking you if you were aware.
I don't remember the specifics.
And then we finally showed him a document from GlaxoSmithKline where GlaxoSmithKline says that the study was entirely flawed. It was a complete failed study, and it certainly didn't show that Paxil was remarkably efficacious for treating children and adolescents in depression.
Can you read that into the record, please?
Essentially, the study did not really show Paxil was effective in treating adolescent depression, which is not something we want to publicize.
We asked him, with that information now, you know, how can you tell us that it would be okay and safe to give a kid Paxil? And he couldn't answer the question. He sat back, he put his head in his hands, and for, you know, the longest 2 minutes sat there silent.
During the last 2 years of his Paxil study, Keller personally pocketed $1 million in drug company money, none of which he disclosed in his published research.
When people look at the field of psychiatry and they hear all these reports in the New York Times and Boston Globe and they see this psychiatrist or this psychologist, you know, took money and didn't disclose it, they wonder, well, is this causing a biases, you know, in the field? I think that's a legitimate concern of the public because of the fact that it is true.
With this level of corruption pervading the testing of psychotropic drugs, one is left with the question, where are those who are entrusted with our protection?
I think that was just chilling, bone chilling to hear that story about how Paxil was approved. Stay tuned. We'll be back after a short break.
Patriot. PatriotPrepared.com carries the leading brands of storable food from Numana, Legacy, and Heaven's Harvest. Patriot Prepared. Our name says it all. We're dedicated to empowering you to be self-reliant and confident in any circumstance. Whether you want to be prepared in the event of an emergency or you're an outdoor sports enthusiast, PatriotPrepared.com has prepackaged meals and kits for your entire family. Legacy, Heaven's Harvest, and Numana are known for high-quality, great-tasting, GMO-free, nutritious food with no chemical preservatives. Simple to prepare, easy to store, gluten-free and organic high-quality nutrition options with a 25-year shelf life. You can't beat the feeling of being food secure when you need it most. So go to PatriotPrepared.com right now to pick up your supply of high-quality, storable food for your family, because it makes good sense to be prepared. That's PatriotPrepared.com.
This is Elizabeth McCabe, a.k.a. Lucky One of Truth Frequency News. I wanted to tell you all about Extendivite from HeartDrop.com. Y'all know I check everything before I air it. When I heard about Extendivite on TFR, I went to HeartDrop.com and started my research. It's got cayenne. That's good for blood and circulation. It stimulates the blood flow. It's got garlic, which fights bacteria like antibiotics, and it lowers the cholesterol and blood pressure. It also has milk thistle, which is the best detox for liver. I couldn't wait to try it out, and I'm glad I did 4 months ago. And here's the obvious results. My hands and feet don't get cold anymore. The varicose veins have faded too. My wrists don't hurt after typing all day. Now, I tell you all this because it's true and I want you to really live life. Try Extendivite. Go to heartdrop.com and order it.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Welcome back. This is Al Whitney, and this is the second hour of In Defense of Humanity, and now we're talking about how to defend ourselves from Big Pharma. And the attack is just brutal, people, I have to tell you. That clip mentioned that there was a researcher who had exposed that the science that they're using in medicine today is bad science. And when I saw the video, I saw a copy of the paper. They didn't say his name, but they showed a copy of the paper that he had published in 2005, and the name of the article is Why Most Published Research Findings Are False. And the man's name is Dr. John Ioannidis. And if you go again, I mentioned, go to the anticorruptionsociety.com and click on the Big Pharma Expose link, and you scroll down and you'll see an article that was appeared, I believe, in the Atlantic Monthly, and I put a link to it right there on that page, right near the top. And John Ioannidis is absolutely right. I mean, he has spent his whole career challenging the bogus garbage that they're selling us in science. And certainly Big Pharma is at the top of the list. Then that clip mentioned these clinical trials and what kind of fraud is going on there. That's so bad that there is a new organization called All Trials, and they have a website, alltrials.net, and they are claiming that about half of all the clinical trials that have been done have never been reported. Now, the clip we just heard explains why they aren't reported, correct? And I think we were all suspicious of that. Obviously, you don't report something that's going to go against your marketing campaign, and you can't sell your drug if it turns out that the trial proved the drug is neither safe nor effective. So let's go on to the next clip, Ken. This one explains how hard they work to sell this whole scheme to doctors. And they're very well.
As powerful psychoactive substances, psychotropic drugs are available only through the prescription of a medical doctor. So how did psychiatrists and drug companies succeed in convincing millions of doctors to prescribe them to hundreds of millions of people? Drug companies are anxious to get their products onto the market as soon as possible. This is, after all, a business, and every day can be worth millions. To assure the public and mainstream physicians that their little-tested psychotropics are safe, drug companies spare no expense in getting psychiatrists to stand behind them, and psychiatrists are happy to take the money.
It's really quite an interesting marriage that the drug companies have with the medical profession, and psychiatry primarily is a strong arm of them.
This relationship is...
Stay tuned. We'll continue after the break.
End time is not what you thought. In their new book, 122436, authors Mike and Cheryl Gilmore bring forth a startling new idea on the beginning of humankind, how life begins on Earth, and when our Creator concludes this age. In the book, 122436, three small groups of individuals, separated by thousands of miles, discover together the answers to the beginning of our universe and all the life it contains. Mike Gilmore is the author of 5 Levels of Power novels and the SLED Investigation series. Cheryl Gilmore is current state director in South Carolina for MUFON and brings a lifetime of experience with UFOs and related fields. As a team, their new book about life in the near future on Earth sets aside most people's religious and scientific beliefs. Available exclusively on Amazon in softback for $8.99 or the ebook price for only $2.99. Remember, Amazon softback $8.99, ebook only $2.99. 122436. Get your copy today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
As powerful psychoactive substances, psychotropic drugs are available.